Next presenter will be Dr. Richard Urso. Dr. Urso is a medical doctor and scientist who graduated AOA with the highest honors from the University of Texas School of Medicine. He continued with 5 years of postgraduate training and research is the sole inventor of an FDA-approved wound healing drug. He's gone on to repurpose many other medications for usage in scarring, wound healing, inflammation, and viral infection. He is the former chief of orbital oncology at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. He's been involved in COVID-19 since March 2020, discussing pandemic response, and he has treated over 1,600 COVID patients. A quick, Dr. Urso, I've always thought of you as an ophthalmologist. You're an ophthalmologist, correct? Yeah, so obviously you have, you know, far greater qualifications, but I always was wondering, what was an ophthalmologist treating adult COVID patients?
But yeah, that's a great question. So I'll get to that. I'll weave that into the story because I think a really positive message. So it's been a great tragedy these last 2 years, but it really didn't have to be that way. I would say with my esteemed colleagues here, thank you for all of you have sort of influenced a lot of my thinking. And I think all of us will say that we have this. We know how to treat diseases. So COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, right from the get-go, I spent 9 years in a tissue culture lab doing inflammation scarring, tumor virus work. I really just looked at it, okay, it's a respiratory virus. What do we know about respiratory viruses? We know that respiratory viruses live about 5 to 7 days. So I was, as I looked at this, I thought, well, that's probably going to be true for this virus. We didn't have it cultured yet, but as it turned out, in the first year of culturing the virus, I don't think any live virus was cultured past 8 days. It was usually about 5-6 days. So that held true. So back in March of 2020, a bunch of my colleagues, we assembled, we started looking at options of what we can do, and it became quite evident after talking to people in Italy and South Korea and elsewhere that it was a respiratory virus that was going to be causing a lot of inflammation. And then one of the unique things that was happening here, this respiratory virus for a coronavirus was causing a lot of blood clotting. So you had respiratory distress, blood clotting, and inflammation. And so as a physician, you know, those are easy conditions to treat. The difficult part was really attacking the virus. And at the time that I first looked, again in March, early March 2020, I found about 8 things that might work based on mechanisms. And so I think these are, like, in a sense, tools in the toolbox that we ought to be trying. So my first patient, I treated with hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, vitamin D, aspirin, and steroids. And I literally was shocked when I went and talked about it that that people were really coming at me about the steroids, because anybody who treats respiratory syncytial virus and other viruses, the inflammatory phase is typically one of the most important phases. And of course, when Dr. Corey came out and said that, he was attacked mercilessly too. But to anybody who treats disease, it really, to me, I was kind of surprised to get attacked. I was getting attacked by people who really didn't know what they were talking about. So what I'll say is, as people who are listening, it's an inflammatory disease. It's a blood clotting disease. We have lots of medicines for inflammation. Why would you not treat inflammation as an outpatient? We have so many different drugs. Why would you not treat blood clotting? We have who gets admitted to the hospital for blood clotting? Maybe a day or two, and then you go back out. There's lots of things we have. Attacking the virus, you have to do that in the first week. And what has happened? We actually have drugs like remdesivir, which are being applied day 15 and 20. They have no chance of working. It's a one-trick pony. It has to work when the virus is replicating. So at that point, what I tell people is the problem is these drugs are, viruses and cancer cells are unique. They use our own machinery. So if you're not killing the virus, you're killing something. You're killing our mitochondria. You're killing our cells. So these are just strategies that it doesn't take a lot of thinking. As a physician, I literally am shocked to see people using these drugs, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 weeks later. They can't work. So at the end of the day, I think the message that I kind of want to send is, as Dr. Cole said earlier, the virus isn't killing people. It's in a sense, it's the viral particles creating the inflammation, creating the blood clots. the cars versus the car parts. So it's not dying from the cars, you're dying from the car parts. And we've had this the whole time, and I want to make one more, which I think is an important point. I would tell everybody, you can take any two drugs away, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and still save almost all the lives. And that's the end message. We have so many tools in the toolbox. That's the message I want everybody to hear. We can beat this disease. I'll give you one more caveat. As we went from Delta to Omicron, one of the things that happened, and we all sort of, we worked together as a team in a sense, we recognized that Omicron did not employ TMPRSS2 binding. What that means, it's like, in a sense, the virus grabs onto cells and it uses an ACE2 receptor, and it also uses another receptor called TMPRSS2. It's a serine protease. The bottom line is, we realized that a lot of the drugs that we were using for Delta, we didn't need in this new disease. That's called the practice of medicine. We adjust. That's what we do. That's how we've always done it. And that's why an ophthalmologist can figure this out, because I had a big background in clinical medicine. I've treated over my career over 300,000 patients. And I'm going to say that I think what you found here, which I want to answer the last point that that Senator Johnson made, is why is an ophthalmologist treating? Because patients were languishing at home. And I've treated over 1,600 patients because patients were languishing at home with no treatment for inflammation, with no treatment for respiratory distress, with no treatment for blood clotting. It's absolutely absurd, and I wasn't going to let it happen. And I think, as you see in this room, all of us feel the same. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Urso. I'm going to break protocol here because I'm in charge. Because there's another question I have. And this is the $64,000 question, and I'll have all of you answer it in some way, shape, or form. Why aren't other doctors using their medical skill? Why aren't they practicing medicine? Listen, I think it's appropriate to practice protocols. I mean, you're developing protocols and you're practicing them, but Why haven't more doctors thought outside the box and, again, had the courage and compassion to actually treat patients as opposed to follow the compassionless guideline from NIH, just succinctly?
So succinctly this, when we first came down in March, we were getting messages to go home. And some of those messages were really strong. They basically said, and this is the start, the fear came into doctors' hearts. They said in Texas, for instance, if you use PPE, that you might be criminally liable for interfering with an Emergency Use Act. And it was pretty scary. A lot of us were like, well, what are we going to do? And we're like, well, I guess I won't wear a mask. But that only continued. It was a coordinated attack creating fear, and doctors felt that. And many doctors are actually working in employed positions, and as time went on, they were told in no uncertain terms, if you use these drugs, you probably will be fired. And nobody had to tell them. They're smart people. You don't have to draw a map.
Well, we'll delve in the timeline in terms of when that initial fear, and let's face it, there was so much we didn't know early, but then we started finding things out to the point we are now 2 years later. But I want to explore that timeline with all of you in terms of, because we have to diagnose what happened. Why are we today in the position we're in today with all we have learned? But we'll cover that. I'm going to have Dr. McCulloch kick off the next portion here.
I'm going to